And now on this episode of Miami Mic'd Up, I'm very happy to welcome in now a repeat guest on Miami Mic'd Up. You guys know her from her coverage of the NHL on Bleacher Report and her coverage of all things hockey on the Too Many Men podcast. It's Sarah Sivian. Sarah, it's so nice to have you back about a year later here to talk Panthers Bruins. It's great to have you here.
You know, long time no see, different circumstances with the Bruins and the Panthers and everybody else. But here we are.
Yeah, almost literally the reverse circumstances, which we'll get into in a bit. But first and foremost, I have to ask you, what is something outside of hockey, outside of work, that has recently brought you joy?
I mean, is it too easy to say the Taylor Swift album? Because that's bringing me immense joy lately.
No, it's not too easy to say it. I think it's bringing a whole lot of us a bunch of joy, including myself. I've been really enjoying it. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on that album. We'll get into that a little bit later, though. We will dive into that, I promise. So if anybody's listening going, I need to know what they think about Taylor Swift, we've got that on the back end of this podcast. But we are going to dive into Panthers Bruins because as we sit here right now, we're 5 games into the series. This is being recorded on Thursday afternoon, obviously game 6 on Friday, Panthers leading 3-2 in this series. And I guess I'll just kind of start right there, which is, what are, Sarah, your general takeaways with the first 5 games of this series, your general thoughts looking at both of these teams and where they stand moving forward going into game 6?
These 5 games have felt like 45 freaking years.
Yeah.
That's takeaway number one. Takeaway number two is it's bizarre. The lopsidedness of the shots, the lack of sustained ozone pressure from the Bruins, the feeling in the air that you just know they're going to blow it, even if maybe it's because they've been losing at home so frequently and home has been dead. And people are talking about this with the Celtics too. It's like, I guess the suits and ties are now buying all these tickets, and it's been pretty brutal, like the wind knocked out of them. But I don't blame fans, because it's just like, please shoot the puck, like stay out of the box, shoot the puck. I mean, we can talk about the goalie interference, but the vibes are off. We all knew that the Panthers were a better team, but the most annoying thing perhaps about the Bruins is that they just like refuse to die, even though we know they aren't as good. It's just like, at a certain point, I guess maybe you have the vibes, but you don't to me.
Yeah, I mean, so I should have prefaced this by letting everybody know who didn't know already. Sarah's a Boston girl. I mean, she's going to be approaching this from that Bruins angle of being around, seeing what things are like with the fan base and everywhere else. And I think I completely understand what you're talking about in terms of sort of a fan base being disheartened by just the general vibes of a team. You know, for that matter, we saw it a little bit with the Heat in that series against the Boston Celtics, where, you know, it ultimately, like you mentioned, kind of the suits and ties are buying the lower level tickets. They're late arriving. The energy's not quite in it. And when you're feeling out of it early in the game already, it's tough to get you back. Honestly, being in Sunrise for game 5, when the Bruins took the lead, it was a bit of like shell shock, because the vibes were so high going into the game. And, you know, I do want to know sort of your thoughts on, this has been sort of a controversial series when you talk about the goalie interference call and the physicality, you know, the Sam Bennett punch. There's been so much back and forth and so much laid out in the media. What's your feeling when you watch everything that's transpired in sort of the dramatic sense of this series so far?
Well, that's goaltender interference. It shouldn't have mattered. Like, right, at the end of the day, you just felt, people criticized me for writing that it doesn't matter. Like, we should establish this. And the comments from the players were all, and Maurice, it's like they knew that was goaltender interference, or at least they didn't know it wasn't.
Right.
But it's just the lack of sustained ozone pressure with the Bruins. Mm-hmm. It's like you just knew if it wasn't then, the Panthers were going to get the lead regardless. It's just the controversy has been, I've been thinking about this today. I think it's galvanized the Bruins a little bit, because they had something else to talk about other than not having 2 shots on goal 8 minutes in within the game. Like, I think having Marchand give the pregame speech when he has it, whatever is going on with him after that punch, which again, bizarre, I don't think malicious, that there was no angle sent to the league. I don't think it's like a secret Panthers fan in the desk being like, oh my God, I'm not going to send this over.
Yeah,
Like
certainly not.
we have questions for Gary that need answers on several things, but you just have to keep playing. Like you don't want to hear the crying. Pat Maroon has been, I think, a good, we just need to win a fucking game, he said. And that's just the, at the end of the day, all the controversy gets the clicks, whatever. I am exhausted by it. I don't want the clicks from it. I don't want
Right.
to go back and forth. I think you have to win the game. And they've been doing that now, so who knows?
Yeah, I know from obviously the Panthers' perspective, and when you look at sort of how the fan bases have been, they've been polarized on every single issue. But I do know that when it comes to the hockey side of it, going into this series, both teams sort of felt like they were going in a separate direction, where I think it's certainly on the Panthers fandom side, it's been a lot of we are the better team, period. And despite what the record was in the regular season against each other, the Bruins being in the spot that they're in, there was a lot of confidence for Florida. And I think that a lot of that has come with Alexander Barkov stepping into a new level of playoff performer than where he was earlier in his career. I know you have always been a fan of Alexander Barkov, but I think this postseason is sort of cementing him in a lot of eyes around the league as like this guy is, we already knew an elite level player, but what he's done thus far has been really impressive to me. What stood out to you from his run thus far in the postseason that makes you go, man, look at what this guy can do?
Yeah, he's finally beating the underrated allegations. Now he's adequately rated.
Right.
I think this was a huge breakout for him. It's really gutsy. It's really above the noise of there's a lot of rats on this Panthers team, and that's a good thing. That like is very fun,
Yeah.
right? And that brings the vibe that a small market team absolutely needs. But he just kind of puts his head down and does his work and the health of the team. I don't know. I've talked to Matt Tkachuk a few times throughout the season. And he just mentioned the confidence of the team and how much everybody loves each other. And like, so when you say confidence, it really is, it starts with a two-way player like Barkov.
Yeah, I mean, he is like, in terms of two-way, it's so special to see him be able to, on any given night, contribute as a completely different style of player. Like he just fits into whatever is needed, and that as a lead player is so I feel unique in any sport, let alone in hockey. And you know, a guy who again has performed at a really high level thus far this postseason has been Sergei Bobrovsky. And it was so funny seeing on, I think it was, gosh, either last week or earlier in this week, there was an article on ESPN.com that was like the legend of playoff Bob. And I think his story is so fascinating, particularly down here, as someone that was brought in as this highly touted goalie that had had these unbelievable playoff runs. He gets here, he struggles to the point where last year, at the beginning of the postseason, you had Alex Lyon in net for the Florida
What a
Panthers.
character,
The
by the
Lion
way.
King, right? I mean, it's crazy to look back at that one, and that starts the run. Bob plays well throughout it. I remember, you know, fans were clamoring not that long ago for Spencer Knight to replace him in net, and yet now here he is with fans supporting him with the full level of confidence and playing great hockey. How unique to you is the Sergei Bobrovsky story?
I think it's a testament to Bobrovsky, obviously, in his nature, right? And how a goaltender who is going to be elite for years has to be able to brush things off. It's also a testament to the coaching staff and the front office, right? The way the roster has been constructed, they took guts to have this contract. And when it didn't work out, it's like so prone to criticism. But then when it works out, it's everything. And I think whatever the goalie coach staff is doing is really working out. But then you go back to last year and their decision to play him again and keep riding him. I think that's where it all comes together, where you're like, okay, they sensed that he was ready. He knew he was ready, and all the things came together. And it was just like kind of a few moment. But a lot of the times, that's not going to happen with a coaching decision.
Right. Well, and so when you talk about coaching, I think that's the perfect segue because I did want to ask you about Paul Maurice and what he's done down here. Because again, narratively, This was a couple of years ago, one of the highest scoring teams in the NHL, playing this free and loose brand of hockey with Jonathan Huberdeau leading things on the offensive end as a 100-point scorer. I mean, they were so fun, and so many fans were so frustrated when they let Andrew Brunette go as the coach and they traded Jonathan Huberdeau for Matthew Tkachuk. And now we see what last year brought and how incredible not only that trade was, but the hire of Paul Maurice has been. It's so funny. I mean, seeing him in game five just absolutely ripping the team, and then immediately the Panthers go out and score. Not saying it's necessarily cause and effect, but this guy seems to just push all of the right buttons for the Florida Panthers. What's your view on what Paul Maurice has done for this franchise in the last couple of years in sort of transforming things into quote-unquote Paul ball?
He's absolutely one of the most interesting people in the league. I think it was telling from the beginning when he quit the Jets and was like, I can't fix them. Like, I can't, this is not the right voice for me. It's like, he has a specific brand of player that he connects with. And it seems like Tkachuk really fits that bill. I talked to Tkachuk after he said, remember, he wasn't getting going offensively in the beginning of the season. And Maurice said, you guys are going to say when he starts scoring again, he's got it now, but he's always had it. It's just kind of the nature of the game. And Tkachuk told me that Maurice is his favorite coach he's ever played for. And it's like, he gives him a longer leash. And sometimes that means 10 shots a night and no goal, but he knows the goal will come. And the trust he has in the players, I think that's why at the same time he would yell at them and use the profanity, he said, on the bench, because he believes in them so much. And he has their back in the media. I mean, there was the one with Ekblad where he was like, right, he'll be fine. He's the heart and soul, whatever. It's like the comments he makes in the media are, first of all, amazing, creative. Like, this league needs that. Yeah. And second of all, just very telling of why this team has such a good relationship with each other and with the coach.
The personality is one thing, right? Being able to go out there and give the types of quotes like he gave, which is, you know, I just thought they could use some profanity. And if there's one thing I'm good at, it's using profanity. I mean, that's a hilarious bite. But it's also pushing all the right buttons with your players and going out and speaking to the media or building. And, you know, down here, we use this term often when it comes to the Heat and people get annoyed by it. But it's like a culture. And I spoke with Sasha Barkov before the postseason, right at the end of the year. And he's someone who's been down here for so long that he was watching the Big Three era of Miami Heat when it was Wade and LeBron and Bosch. And he said that he like learned from what he saw going on with the Heat organization in terms of building this culture that was sustainable. And so having a coach like Paul Maurice come in, whose focus is on every aspect of the game and executing it the right way, to go along with a leader like Alexander Barkov and a guy who's got the motor of Matthew Tkachuk, it all sort of works out so well for the Panthers to be able to sort of instill that culture themselves and have all of the players believe in what it is that they're doing, that even when last year the regular season doesn't go the way you think it should, all right, here comes the postseason success. Even this year, when Matthew Tkachuk starts slow, all right, we know he'll come along. When you're looking at this postseason and even particular the series, you know, we've mentioned some of the sort of headlining names already in Barkov and Tkachuk, and for that matter, Bobrovsky. But who's a name that you've watched for the Panthers thus far in these first two series that you say, hey, that guy has really impressed me with the way he's played?
I mean, it's always Carter Verhaeghe. He's always one of the most clutch playoff performers in the past 5 years. He reminds me of that dynasty with the Penguins back in the day where it was like, if Crosby and Malkin, et cetera, aren't getting it done, there's going to be the third line, the second line, whatever, that's going to pop in. And you need that scoring depth. And that's been kind of lost in the head games of the last 5 years, I think, with the foot races. And like, people are saying, oh, we need to double down and get bigger. We need more like snarl. And it's, you're losing the plot. You just need that Penguins-esque dynasty 2017 vibe. And that's kind of what these Panthers are to me in some ways. And I think Verhaeghe embodies that more than anyone. It's just like, oh my God, when you guys got Tarasenko too, it's like rounding out the top six picture perfectly. I do get really confused that he's not wearing his number and someone else is wearing his number. I'm like, let's bring that back. But the forward group here is just so strong in every way.
Yeah, the depth has been so obvious through these first couple of rounds when you watch you know, gosh, I mean, in the first round series against Tampa, it was like the fourth line that was really doing most of the work that was getting the Panthers back into games. Stevie Lawrence with a big goal late in the game. Like it, it's him. Been really, he's awesome. He was just on the podcast a couple weeks ago. He's like the nicest guy in the world.
He is. I got to know him kind of well and his family because we were covering, well, I was covering the Hurricanes during the pandemic. And I had this call with his dad before his NHL debut. And he was just like sobbing about how proud he was of Stevie. It's like, you know, like that's something you love about hockey. Just like these good old Canadian boys.
Well, it is funny because that was like the main thing that he was focused on was talking about like his family and his sisters and how they've all been so supportive for him and getting to talk to them after the game winning goal, how great that's all been. But I want to kind of move off of this series for a bit. Actually, let me ask you this before we do. I don't want to get ahead of myself because there are still games to win for the Florida Panthers, but say they wrap this up in 6 or 7 games. And God, for my own stress level, I'm really hoping it's 6, but what are the challenges ahead in the Eastern Conference Finals for the Panthers? And how do you see them sort of stacking up?
I don't know if Bobrovsky's been as sharp as he has been in the past through the losses. I mean, that's easy to say, but what's your ace if that falls apart against a team like the Rangers? There's that. There's obviously special teams. I mean, the Panthers have been pretty good at the special teams, though. But is that going to dry up against the Rangers' penalty kill? Is one of the best penalty kills I've seen in years. And everyone's asking, why can't the Hurricanes score a power play goal? It's like, just watch the game with your eyeballs. This is an amazing penalty kill that has figured out a certain formula that the Hurricanes have tried to employ. It's like, will they do the same thing for the Panthers? But what? I mean, then it could be the Hurricanes and they'd want revenge, but who knows?
Well, if the Hurricanes are able to sort of pull it off and win game 6 and 7, that'll be a whole other conversation. But if it is the Rangers, and by the way, by the time people are listening to this, it very well could be the Rangers because they're playing tonight in game 6, tonight being Thursday. What are the for those who haven't paid attention, what are the greatest strengths of the New York Rangers that Florida will be trying to sort of tamper down?
Listen, they were called underdogs by all the sports bet books, and they were called playoff or power play merchants because of the fact that they're weak at even strength, or relatively weaker at even strength than they are on the power play. But why does that matter if they're winning every game by one with a power play goal?
Right.
They just get it done on the power play. It's Chris Kreider, net front, boom, money. Like Artemi Panarin, he's having his Barkov moment too, where they're both breaking out. You know, Panarin's being the best player. He's rising up in overtime on the power play, whatever you need. It's like, then you have Shesterkin at the other end of the ice. So if you're not going to score against them, you're going to have a hard time doing so. And they're going to score against you. It's just kind of as simple as that. And like, if you aren't winning the 5-on-5 game, you period are not winning this game.
Well, it's clear that against that team, you have to be sharp for the entire game. They'll take advantage of any of your mistakes. And particularly in the power play, where the Panthers have been great. I mean, the Panthers have been really good in power play for most of the year. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, you need to be sharp all the way through the deeper you get into the postseason. So now we will move away from this series. And I just kind of wanted to know, across the NHL, what have been maybe 3 of your sort of favorite storylines from across the NHL this season?
The Vancouver Canucks, they keep finding ways to win. They have this electric and scary fan base that is very much as close to NBA Twitter as we're going to get as a community. They're loud, they're funny, you'll get eaten alive and you deserve it. I am a big, but they're also rolling with the punches. They just care. They're good for the league. I like their resiliency of the team, and it's just this playoff series too with the Oilers. It's anybody's coming back at any time, at any second. And that was kind of their first round too. So they've been electric and fun to watch. Other storylines from this year. I think Freddie Anderson coming back from a blood clotting issue and playing the best hockey of his life and kind of having a new lease and appreciation for the game and his teammates and stuff. I don't know. That's been really powerful according to the people around him in the locker room. And stuff. That's been good to see. And oh my God, the Hart Trophy race.
Yeah.
That's been down to the wire. McKinnon, there's like 7 people you could list. Kucherov, Matthews,
Yeah, I mean,
the whole gang.
what it
I
is
voted for
it's
McKinnon.
the top. Okay, so that's good to know. The top of the league, I think, is essentially what you're saying here, which is like hockey has been excellent this season. Like just looking around the NHL, any game you watch on any given night, the skill has been so spectacular. And it reminds me of kind of where the NBA was a few years ago before we kind of, it was like in that sweet spot right before the three-pointer started getting exploited by every team when Golden State was exploiting the three-pointer, but you had all of these individual stars in all of these other places that were leading teams, and the top of the league was so spectacular. It's still the case in the NBA right now, but the way that the kind of the game has changed in terms of the pace and space on three-pointers is different. But hockey's been spectacular this season.
It's kind of, nobody wants to hear this, but the slew of questions when first round exits happen, it's like, how does this team improve? It's like, maybe they're just playing a really good other team. Like the hockey genuinely is so good right now that sometimes there isn't an easy, obviously you want to improve on whatever would make you better than that team, but it's going to be good with the salary cap raising because you'll get an opportunity to do that. But with a lower salary cap and with all these good parity teams around you, it's enjoyable for us, but sometimes there just aren't that many answers at the end of like a first or second round exit.
A couple more hockey questions before I get some kind of rapid fire stuff going at the end. For you individually, what was your favorite piece of work you made this year? Whether that was a podcast with too many men, a article that you wrote. What was your favorite piece of media that you created?
I think the story I did for Elite Prospects Ringside when I was in Toronto, kind of asking about the emergence of the PWHL. I talked to a lot of the owners, a lot of former professional women's hockey players, present, past, future, commentators and stuff, just getting a real grasp on how special this league is, where women's sports in general are headed, and going to those games and being more involved in things like that. I think it really was touching to hear some stories from some of the greats just about how much this league actually means, because you can go back and forth on the Pat McAfee show or whatever it is about like, oh, women's sports is good now. But like, yeah, we know, like we've been here, and for years, these women have put blood, sweat, and tears into it. And you just want to do their stories justice. So I really enjoyed doing that.
I saw someone on Twitter in that conversation about like, oh, the WNBA is good now, say like, oh man, you know, Bridesmaids was pretty funny, which I just thought was such a great
like,
way
we're supposed
of
to clap
all of it. Yeah, like come on.
People got so mad at me because I wasn't coddling him. I'm like, I don't mind him and I'm not being angry. I'm just like, yeah, where have you been? This is like a cash cow now.
It's disappointing when it's viewed as gatekeeping to expect more of top tier analysts and podcasters and media members.
Yeah.
Like you got to be able to follow it and speak to it in not a sort of pedantic way. But that all being said, everybody should go find that article that you wrote on the PWHL, because you do a great job covering everything in hockey. And that's what the Too Many Men podcast does. So for those who are listening to this, who have not listened to your podcast with Allison Lucan and Shannon Goldman, what is Too Many Men? And why are you guys unique as a hockey podcast that everybody should be listening to every week?
I know, that's a great question. I think, why are we unique? It's because I feel like I can say things and then be like, wait, should I have said that? And nobody gets mad at me. It's just that we are having conversations that it feels like we try to vent in our own minds about, like we genuinely want to have conversations about what's going on in the NHL, for better or for worse, if it's funny, heartwarming, whatever. I feel like we have a little bit of a community with maybe a niche in hockey fandom where it's not like the old boys club. I mean, men are welcome to listen, but I've had friends listen to it, describe it as maybe a breath of fresh air, because I mean, not because of my raspy voice, all allergy see, that's not fresh, but like just maybe saying some of the quiet things out loud about the way the NHL needs to go to be a popular, sustainable sport, and just the happenings around the league, and is hockey culture changing for the better or not. And then there's some levity, I think. We just try to bring our personalities to it every day, and we're all from different parts of the hockey world. So I don't know, we're all in a group chat, besties. So I think it's that come to life.
It certainly comes through in every episode how close you guys are. But I do think that what you mentioned there of being able to sort of look, you guys are proponents of hockey. You guys are proponents of hockey, whether that's the NHL or any other league, professional or not. But the biggest thing is that you can be a proponent of something and also still understand the places where it needs to grow. And I think that you guys do a very good job of finding that balance between like, hey, this is the best sport, we love it, and also here's ways that the league can grow to be more inclusive of every fan. And also, you know, hey, here's a player who said something that, you know what, I don't love so much. Or, you know, things like that, where you guys can, because of that friendship, have those types of conversations without it feeling repetitive or not enough. So I highly recommend everyone goes and listens to Too Many Men. A few quick rapid fire things before we finally get to the Taylor Swift conversation that I want to have. So Sarah Sivian, what does your ideal off day look like?
Oof. Either ripping like a leg day or hiking with my boyfriend who runs ultra marathons, 50-mile marathons. I can't keep up with him, but we have our nice little hikes. Getting a little coffee, oat milk.
a little oat milk latte.
Yes.
There's
oysters, oysters in Seaport, Boston. Three beers, no more, no less. And then live music.
Man, that's a perfect day. You've answered this better than anybody that has come on this podcast. You had it specifically ready to go. If you had to host a TED Talk that was not about hockey, what would it be about?
ADHD in women, maybe, and how to notice the signs that aren't necessarily being fidgety and how you can kind of help your own brain and release shame surrounding it. I don't know. That's been something I've struggled with my whole life. You got a late diagnosis and it's like you become a student of your own emotions and stuff. And now I'm grateful that I've learned more about myself, but I feel like, oh my God, I wish 10 years ago somebody told me there's a different way to view this as a woman, you know?
I absolutely love that. And now I'm going to petition you to use an episode of Too Many Men to just turn that into your TED Talk, because that would be amazing. Something that people would be surprised to know about you.
I have a lot of loving, friendly men in my life that I'm really close with. Like, I guess there's a perception online, I guess from who though, from like the number one, 80-year-old men, 15-year-old boys that are like trolls that... The reason I would tell healthy masculinity is literally texting my boyfriend or my dad some meme about men suck and they laugh. And it's like, yeah, they can say girls suck about something too. Like, it's not that serious. I have a lot of laughter in my life.
I love that, especially given the present conversation happening online regarding one Chiefs kicker. Would you rather explore the ocean or outer space?
Outer space. Oh my goodness.
Does the ocean scare you the way it scares me?
No.
It's not the fear. It's just more interest in outer space.
Yes. Okay. I think I like to say I'm not afraid of the ocean. Being in a submarine would scare me. It's much cooler to me, the idea of being in space. You don't know the sensations. I know the sensation of being in water.
That's fair. I guess it's that element that's different. For me, I'm just so, I feel like there's so much, and it's crazy to say like, oh, we know more about outer space. We don't. But there's so much about the ocean that I'm like, how could we not know so much about something that is actively on our planet? It's a whole other element. But all right, so diving into some Taylor Swift stuff, there was something I wanted to do here with you, because I know you are also, if I remember correctly, a fan of the 1975.
Yes.
So what I was going to have you do is, if I opened up both songbooks, all of Taylor Swift's discography and all of the 1975's discography, put it together, could you make a top five songs list hybridized between these two artists? Or is this too much of a task? And you could be honest with me if it is.
I think I can do it. I need a second.
All right. Take your second. What I will say is, for those of you who are late to the party on this Taylor Swift album and what it all means, Taylor Swift and Matty Healy, the lead singer of the 1975, were dating for a stretch of time.
It was on and off,
maybe a decade, maybe not. Maybe in between every other relationship. It's this very complicated, convoluted situation. And about a year ago, at this time, each were touring. They were going back and forth to each other's concerts. Everybody was wondering, are they dating? Are they not dating? And ultimately, after being publicly dating for like a little while, Taylor's fans were not so happy about her dating Matty Healy. That all sort of crumbled around itself. And now, about a year later, the Tortured Poets Department comes out as Taylor Swift's album. And it turns out, while everybody thought that this album was going to be about her long-term ex-boyfriend, Joe Alwyn, it actually turns out that the majority of the songs are about said rock star ex-boyfriend Matty Healy of the 1975. And so that intertwines this entire timeline, relationship. Mind you, Matty Healy in the 1975's most recent album, produced by Jack Antonoff. That is also Taylor Swift's lead producer who produced this album. It's a whole bunch of stuff.
That's my conspiracy theory. He's doing this on, he's the puppeteer. Like, he's yes, the one that, more
he's
content.
He's the one that put everybody together. Yeah, it really does kind of feel that way sometimes. But all right, I did my explanation to try to stall and give you some time to put together a list. I don't feel like I helped because I feel like you were probably more interested in the narrative that I was talking about. But if we can go backwards from five.
Backwards. Nope. Okay, so I have to power rank them?
You know what? It's fine. You don't have to power rank them.
Let
That's a big task, too.
5 to 8, and I'm not going to rank them okay, because so it's too outside. Hard.
Okay, all right. I'm excited to hear this.
1975. I'm not going to get too cute with it. 1975, give yourself a try.
Oh, so good.
It's not living if it's not with you.
Also great.
And then we're going to go to Taylor. New Romantics.
Mm-hmm.
All Too Well, 10-minute version.
Right, it has to be the 10-minute version. I'm glad you chose the right one.
It has to be. What do we got popping on? Reputation. Getaway Car.
Great. And for those of you who haven't seen the viral video, we were talking about Jack Antonoff. There is a very ridiculous, very corny, and also wonderful viral video of Taylor Swift and Jack Antonoff somehow just going back and forth, ping-ponging back and forth, creating lyrics for the song Getaway Car. So go enjoy that one.
I'm in a getaway car, and his hands, and he's like yeah. and you're da-da-da-da. Me and my friends, when we're drunk, we always do.
Yeah, it's just so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous, but it's a fun one. It's a fun one.
Okay, two more. I want to say Cruel Summer before it was cool. Now I've listened to it genuinely a million times. Yeah. I think I am all of the listens to this on Spotify. I'm taking a break from it before the concert. I'm going to see her in Vancouver.
Well, and it's almost summertime, so you have no choice but to listen to it then.
Hopefully it won't be that cruel of a summer. And then
hey.
It's the two newest albums are like just too soon, but at the same time, I think I'm prepared to say would have, could have, should have. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, look, for me, when you say everything's too soon, like Being Funny in a Foreign Language, the 1975's most recent album, to me is not only their best album, it's one of my favorite albums of all time. Like it's truly one of my favorite records. And to then have that followed up with the Tortured Poets Department and having all of the lore kind of come together is a blast. And I gotta say, I really appreciate the top five you put together here. I'm thankful that you were able to do it.
Are you on the TikTok where it's like, they put about you into,
oh yeah, come on, am I on the TikTok that's
and
done
Maddie's
that?
Dancing,
yeah, and have are you on TikTok for the mashup of I think it's what is the first song, it's Fortnite but with somebody else, the beat of somebody else playing in the background.
Oh yeah.
Have you heard that one too? Yeah, so here we are. All right, we've done it. This is it. For all of you who were here for the Taylor Swift Matty Healy talk, you got it. Thanks to Sarah Sivian. Sarah, thank you so much for spending so much time with me on Miami Mic'd Up. I really appreciate it. Let the people know where they can follow you, what they should listen to, and all of that stuff before I let you go.
Of course, yeah. Still on Twitter at SaraCiv as in Victor, IIN. And still just cranking out the content as best as I can and everywhere.
Yeah, it is everywhere. She's a great follow, particularly through the rest of these hockey playoffs. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today on Miami Mic'd Up.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me.